Today on Maine Calling, politics reporters discuss the results of the primary election and the ranked choice runoffs. In the wee hours last Friday, 10 days after Election Day, we finally learned who the candidates will be in three of Maine's major political races. Hannah Pingree won a close ranked choice runoff among the Democratic candidates for governor. Bobby Charles, the early leader, won the ranked choice runoff on the Republican side. And Matt Dunlap squeezed out the win among Democrats in the 2nd Congressional District. Now what? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, political reporters analyze what we learned from the 2026 primaries and tell us what they're watching in the weeks and months ahead. These are races with both state and national implications. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Well, the votes have been tabulated, and now we know who came out on top in the ranked choice voting races and who will move on to the general election. Joining us for the hour to talk about the outcomes of the primary election and what to expect in the months ahead, Susan Cover, State House reporter and multimedia content producer with Spectrum News, and Kevin Miller, Maine Public State House correspondent. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you think about the way ranked choice voting panned out? How are you feeling about the upcoming November election? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome back, Susan and Kevin. And as always, we tend to get you on Maine Calling when it's really a busy time for both of you, so I especially appreciate it. Let's just start talking about the ranked choice voting. In this primary election, it decided three of the major races, and in two cases, the Democrats for governor and the Democrats in the second CD, the winner was different than the candidate who was in the lead on election night. Let's talk about how that happened. Kevin, I'll start with you. How did Hannah Pingree win the race for the Democratic nomination for the governor's office?
Yeah, thanks, Jen. So Hannah Pingree, she was in second, headed into the ranked choice vote, as you mentioned, behind Dr. Nirav Shah. And basically what happened is we saw what played out was similar to what, you know, the candidates below Shah were saying. Hannah Pingree, Troy Jackson, and Shanna Bellis had all kind of formed this group where they were urging their supporters to vote for each other in the ranked choice voting. And what we saw was Hannah really kind of leapfrogged beyond Dr. Shah by picking up so many of those, you know, third, second, third, fourth, even fifth, you know, place, or not in that case, third choice candidates. So she ended up gaining much more. You know, she ended up coming, I think it was almost 25,000 votes ahead of Dr. Shah in the end, despite trailing him going into the ranked choice tabulations.
Yeah. Susan Cover, anything you'd like to add to what Kevin said? I mean, we really saw the jump when Shanna Bellis' votes were counted, right? Her second place votes.
Yeah, that's right. That jump was 10 percentage points at that point. And then when Troy Jackson went out, it gave Hannah another 20 percentage points. So, yeah, that alliance was huge for Hannah in the voting. And I'm looking at an analysis by FairVote, and they said that Pingree earned 68% of total transfers compared to 32% for Shaw. So it did definitely have an impact on the final outcome of the race. And as you said, you know, it gives you a different result than what we would have had on election night.
Of course, you know, it's probably. One, oh, yeah. Go ahead, Kevin.
You know, one thing that I think is interesting, like we're myself and Sue, and I think a lot of other people are kind of reading into that, saying that this was a result of that alliance that they formed, but it also could be a lot of other factors that went into it. It could just be that people decided, you know, that Dr. Shaw didn't have as much government experience, so they wanted somebody with that government experience, and Hannah Pingree, Shanna Bellows, and Troy Jackson all had that. So you know, that's it's hard to say, but that certainly seems to have been an influential factor here.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I was going to say. I mean, and I'll turn to you, Susan. There's really no way to know. It was the first time we saw candidates, or the first time in my memory that we saw candidates be explicitly strategic about the whole ranked choice process. But we don't really know if the voters paid attention to that or not, do we?
We don't. You know, and another argument that the candidates made for forming this alliance was that it might make for a friendlier race among the three of them, like Kevin said, who had state government experience versus Angus King III and, you know, Dr. Shaw, who certainly, you know, worked for state government at the CDC level, but has never been in elected office in Maine. So, you know, it is hard to know what motivates folks, but, you know, supporters of ranked choice voting will say, well, that's the beauty of it, right? You don't have to just pick one person. You can pick maybe your dream candidate, but knowing that they really don't have a chance to win. And then you rank other folks behind them. And eventually you get kind of a consensus candidate who can come out with 56% of support from Democratic primary voters versus if it had been the first past the post, you would have had Dr. Shaw with just 27% support.
All right. Well, so this sets up an interesting race for governor with Hannah Pingree, Bobby Charles, who is a Trump-aligned Republican, and independent Rick Bennett, the former Senate president who used to be head of the Maine Republican Party. Susan, how does Rick Bennett affect this race? Does he split the Republican vote? Does he split the non-MAGA vote? Does he go into these final 5 months as the favorite?
Well, I guess I'm not prepared to say anyone's a favorite at this point. We're just about, you know, 10 days away from the primary. Certainly, as you explained, Rick Bennett is no stranger to Maine politics and to Maine voters. You know, a lot of people like to call, you know, independents, you know, spoilers or potential spoilers. I don't see him at all in that way. I think he's on equal footing with the other two, given his experience. Democrats are certainly very worried about him. Several weeks ago, they already launched a website pointing out his past support for things that they think, you know, Mainers might find questionable or objectionable, maybe not expanding Maine care, when a lot of Democrats certainly would have supported that. So I think we're looking at, you know, three candidates who are all very different. They all bring something different to the table, generationally different. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this all plays out.
And to be clear, this race will not be determined by ranked choice voting. Kevin, it is interesting, though, that it looks as though the Democrats are worried about Rick Bennett.
Yeah, I'd say actually both parties are worried. We did, as you mentioned, we did see the Democrats launch this website kind of going after Rick Bennett. But in the past couple of weeks, the Republicans have been going after him as well. Bobby Charles keeps bringing Rick Bennett up. And on Thursday, right before the ranked choice tabulations, he held a press conference. You know, a lot of his press conference was focused on criticizing the ranked choice process and how long it takes. But he did kind of pivot and go after Rick Bennett. And said, you know, this is unfair because we have this independent who's been allowed to campaign while the rest of us are in limbo. And he's not a, you know, he's not a Republican. He's a Democrat. So we're starting to see more rhetoric coming from the Republicans, which I think does suggest that they're concerned, because I think there is a legitimate concern. As you mentioned there, when we headed into the primaries, a lot of the candidates, the Republican candidates opposite of Charles, were saying he's too extreme. He's not going to fare well in the general election. And somebody like Rick Bennett, that is a former Republican, but definitely comes from the more moderate wing and is now an independent, there's the possibility that I think a lot of some moderate Republicans and some independents are going to gravitate towards him.
We have not talked about another very close ranked choice race yet, and that is in the 2nd Congressional District. After on election night, it showed Baldacci in the lead, but now we have Matt Dunlap as the winner. Susan, break this one down. How did that happen?
Yeah, so this was really close. On election night, you had Baldacci at 32%, Matthew Dunlap at 29%, and Jordan Wood at 29%. So Paige Loud was the first to go out with only 10% of the vote, and Dunlap picked up 4% in that round. excuse me. And then with Jordan Wood and Dunlap were so close, there were only 300 votes between the two of them when Wood went out. And then when you see his votes redistributed, you see Dunlap pick up 19%, Baldacci only 14%. And then you end up with Dunlap at 52% and Baldacci at 48%. So this was a really closely contested election. I could have seen any scenario where the top three would have come out on top. And, you know, in the end, we have State Auditor Matt Dunlap to go on to face Governor LePage in the fall.
Yeah, it seems to me that, or it occurs to me, Kevin, that Matt Dunlap and Graham Plattner, who have very different personalities and very different backgrounds and are in different races, still have something very much in common, and that is that they both defeated the candidate who was backed by the Democratic National Committee. And I'm wondering, were Maine voters intentionally thumbing their nose at these national party leaders, or is this just coincidence? Is it the way it worked out?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say. There definitely was a factor, I think, for some voters. This is clearly an anti-establishment year for Democrats. So I think that was much more evident, to me at least, during the Senate primary, where Graham Plattner just really kind of ran away with things, and Governor Mills, Jenna Mills, just never was able to catch up. In the second congressional district race, the National Party, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which is the kind of campaign arm of the House Democrats, they came in for Joe Baldacci, but they came in fairly late. They stayed out of the race, but they didn't also endorse Matt Dunlap for some time, even though he was in the race for the longest. So it's hard. I think it's harder to say in that race. That was definitely a theme that we were hearing from Matt Dunlap and Jordan Wood and Paige Loud, you know, really going after Joe Baldacci and calling him the establishment pick. But in some ways, I think, especially in the second district, it's a pretty, you know, it's almost a local race in that district. And I think a lot of people were probably voting based on, you know, they knew Matt Dunlap or they knew Joe Baldacci, but it's hard to say.
Mm. And Susan, Kevin makes an interesting point. Both Governor Mills and Joe Baldacci got in a little later.
Yeah, they definitely did. You know, obviously, Governor Mills had been rumored to be contemplating a run for several months. And I think that's what kept a lot of other Democrats from jumping in. She didn't get in until October. And by then, Plattner had already had 2 months of runway to really get a toehold into the race. You know, and when you look at Baldacci, yeah, he didn't get in until January. And I think he would argue that really the reason that Dunlap won was that there was some GOP money that came in to target Baldacci at the end with a lot of negative advertising. So he really feels like that cut into his vote share leading into Tuesday's election.
So Matt Dunlap will face former Governor LePage, as Susan mentioned. Kevin, what do you expect to see in this race?
Well, it's going to be an interesting race, as it seems like most of the second district races are or have been over the past decade. So we have, you know, Governor LePage, very well-known person here in Maine, still seems to have that kind of bedrock support among Republicans. The question, as has been in past elections, is how is he going to do with that critical group of independents in the middle? You know, Matt Dunlap has obviously shored up his support among Democrats. People are rallying behind him. The other candidates in the primary are coming out in support of him. But again, you know, how much crossover support is he going to be able to get in that middle? I think what we're seeing, and that we're going to keep hearing this, is the Democrats are going to make an issue of Governor LePage's loyalty to the state of Maine and his residency. You know, he is a resident of the state of Maine, but he has moved back to Florida twice now after he left office. And we're going to hear that over and over and over again. And Matt Dunlap, you know, frequently points out that he is a lifelong resident of not only Maine, but the second district. So I think that's going to be a really critical issue that Democrats are going to hammer. And then Republicans on the other side are going to hammer Matt Dunlap and portray him as being too progressive, too left-leaning for the second district.
Mm, and interesting, Kevin, when you said they're going to make this about, I thought you were going to say Donald Trump, but no, they're going to make it about residency. Susan, is a vote in the second district for Dunlap or LePage really a proxy for a vote for or against the president's policies?
Oh, well, I think definitely that is going to be one of the talking points that Democrats bring up. You know, when you're looking at the balance of power in the House, I mean, Republicans see the second congressional district as a huge opportunity for them to put it over into their category now. They're looking at a very tough election cycle. So, you know, certainly if Governor LePage is in that seat, he would vote for Donald Trump's policies almost straight down the line. And Matt Dunlap would vote against them. So I think it's a clear contrast there for folks who are concerned about the Trump administration and some of, you know, their initiatives moving forward. You know, I think it's interesting, too, on this issue of residency. And Kevin and I both covered, you know, one of the Dunlap events where he highlighted Governor LePage living part time out of the state. I think that's an interesting line of attack. I don't know how well it will play. I mean, obviously, Governor LePage, you know, grew up here and has strong ties here. He's not someone who just moved here in his 50s to run for governor and served 8 years and now is bouncing back and forth to serve again. So I think LePage has a very strong case to make that he is a Mainer and he does care about Maine and its future.
Kevin.
Yeah, I think that's right. As Sue just said, I mean, I think the residency angle will come up, you know, and Democrats are going to focus on it to say, like, really, how committed is he to the state of Maine? You know, at this point in his career, he keeps on kind of bouncing back and forth. As for, like, the question of, is this going to be, you know, kind of a referendum on President Trump? Absolutely. I agree with both of you on that point. I mean, this is such a potentially critical seat for either party to control the House. What I think is also interesting is in the past, just when Matt Dunlap was announced as the winner, we saw Republicans try to link him to Graham Blattner. And in all the statements that came out said, you know, one of the things that, you know, that Dunlap has not addressed is he's not criticized Graham Blattner. So you're going to have the Democrats are going to link LePage to Trump. And then the Republicans seem to be trying to link Dunlap to Blattner. So it's going to be an interesting dynamics.
Oh, my. Okay. So let's talk about Hannah Pingree. She has deep background in Maine government and policy. She's former Speaker of the House and more recently Director of the Governor's Office of Policy, Innovation, and the Future. But she is also Congresswoman Shelley Pingree's daughter. Susan, how does this affect the governor's race? Do people care about political dynasties, either positively or negatively, in Maine?
Well, they may, but I do think that Hannah has carved her own path. Certainly, she was elected to the Maine House of Representatives, you know, four times on her own, as her own candidate. She served as Speaker of the House on her own as a young woman and then left to raise a family for a while. And as you pointed out, spent the last 7 years working for Governor Mills and leading an initiative on some of the really most difficult issues facing Maine, climate change and housing. So I think people can separate Hannah Pingree from Shelley Pingree. Obviously, Congresswoman Pingree is super popular in the first district, maybe not so much statewide. So I think Hannah will be, you know, spending a lot of time in the second district, making sure that voters there understand that, you know, she wants to be a governor for the entire state and is quite distinct from her mom and her mom's votes and policies.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. What are your questions or comments about this primary election that was unlike any other in Maine? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, or find us on social media. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are discussing the interesting primary races and how they turned out, and about how the campaigns are shaping up for the general election. Joining me for the hour, Kevin Miller, who is Maine Public State House correspondent, and Susan Cover, State House reporter and multimedia content producer with Spectrum News. We invite you to join the conversation. What did you think as the results were coming in? What are you thinking about now as we go into this home stretch before the November election? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Jamie, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Maybe I'll just keep it simple and focus on the fact that there are so many candidates I think if there's a paradigm shift for ranked choice voting, it's that, hey, can I get my foot in the door and have a chance to get, you know, noticed and then maybe climb a ladder? And the fact that you had, like, what, seven candidates on both sides of this, you know, and then four, I think, in the second district, it just, you know, if there's a big shift, it almost lends itself, there's going to be some grouping, and there was, you know. So I think, that's one of the big changes I see in ranked choice voting. The candidates just, you know, they think they got a path, and they get in and stay in, and they don't drop out, I guess.
Oh, yeah. So you're thinking that maybe there are more candidates there would have been than there would have been without ranked choice voting.
Absolutely. I think there's some people on the fringes might have thought, you know, I can't, you know, I'm not going to have a chance. And so I'll leave it there, though. Let your group comment.
All right. Thanks, Jamie. Susan, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. I do think, particularly on the Republican side, we saw a lot of candidates, obviously, in the race, and a lot of candidates who had no previous government experience at all. I think in the past, you would have seen kind of more traditional candidates who had that kind of government experience background. So, I think when you think of how ranked choice voting works, you think you might have a shot at, breaking through in a way that you wouldn't have been able to if it was just, you know, how things came out on election night.
Kevin, you agree?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's an interesting point. Kind of going back to, looking back to, like, say, the 2010 gubernatorial election, that was a crowded field, I think, on both sides. But by the time we got to the primary, I think there were a few, somewhat fewer candidates. It's hard to look back that many years. But I think, to the callers, to Jamie's point, I think it's interesting that whether the ranked choice voting does encourage more people to stay in longer. I think that very well might be the case, that, you know, someone who may not have done as well before we had ranked choice voting opts to stay in all the way to the primary.
Jamie, thanks so much for your call. We have an email here from Maggie. Is there a count of how many voters only selected one candidate for each office and did not participate in ranking their choices? I did not rank choices. I am a registered Democrat. Do we know the answer? Do either of you know? Kevin?
I'm sure that those calculations are out there. One way we can see that is to look at the number of exhausted ballots after each round. I don't have those figures right in front of me right now, but it's definitely, you know, a fair number of people did. I think it's probably more likely that happened in the Republican primary, because Republicans have always been a little bit more hesitant to use ranked choice voting, and then the party leadership has certainly been critical of it. But at the same time, we obviously saw quite a few Republicans ranking their candidates this time around.
Ray on Facebook, I'm going to read a bunch of Facebook comments. Ray on Facebook says, ranked choice voting needs to go. It's not fair and costs Maine taxpayers too much. Barbara on Facebook writes, honestly, Dr. Shaw should have been the winner. He got the most first choice votes, and that's what matters. Now we have a candidate who not as many people liked. It doesn't seem fair. And then Ginny replied, Shaw had less than 30%. Hard to call that the winner, especially when the other candidates were just a few percentage points below him. The race was pretty tight. Susan, is this going to be a sampling of conversations for years to come in Maine about ranked choice voting and whether it's a good idea?
Oh, absolutely. And, as Kevin mentioned, Republicans continue to criticize the system. I saw on Facebook over the weekend that the assistant Republican leader in the House has already submitted a bill to repeal it when the legislature comes back into session in January. There's questions about how long it takes to tabulate the results. And I know Kevin has, some insight into that compared to previous years when there were ranked choice voting tabulations. So, you know, it's a somewhat novel system. I think Maine is one of only two states that use it. I think Alaska is the other. And, you know, some other cities use it as well. But I think it takes some time for folks to get used to it. You don't have to use it, obviously, but if you go all in and vote straight across for your person and they're eliminated in the first round, then, you know, your vote basically isn't counted anymore. So there's a lot of things to discuss. And I know, these kinds of discussions will be ongoing for years to come.
So Kevin, you know, you tell it was 10 days if you count, you know, Friday, the early morning hours. What took so long?
There were a lot of things that always come up during these ranked choice tabulations. We're talking about 487 towns across the state where people vote. And in those four, when you have 487 of anything, there's bound to be some hiccups along the way. Nothing of what we saw during the past week and a half, 2 weeks was unusual in that respect. You had towns that they're, you know, some towns still hand count their ballots. Most towns feed their ballots into the optical scanning machines, and then that gets downloaded onto a thumb drive. There's some towns that sent the wrong thumb drive, or the thumb drive wouldn't read correctly. There were towns that the ballots they had to rescan for one reason or the other. There's the auxiliary ballots where someone came in, you know, wanted to vote, but for whatever reason their ballot could not be scanned. They get counted separately. So there's all kinds of little things that irregularities that happen. What I found interesting is, you know, we've had ranked choice voting now since 2018. It was first used during the Democratic primary in 2018. Then we saw it used really high profile during the general election, which was the first time ever that a national race, a congressional race, was decided by ranked choice voting. So during the five previous ranked choice elections for large scale elections, talking primary general elections, those ranged from 7 days to 10 days in length. We came in right at a little over 9 days. So this was right kind of within that window. What's, I think, interesting, and I know, Sue, you heard a lot of this too, there was a lot of grumbling in the room as this was all happening about this takes too long, we need to make some changes. I think we hear that every time there's a calculation. From my point of view, the Secretary of State's office, you know, they are trying to streamline this and get it down to, you know, as much of a science as they can. But again, when you're talking about 487 towns, 487 clerks, election staff, there's always going to be things that are going to come up that are going to delay it.
Susan, anything to add?
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, that Maine elections are deliberately kind of low tech. You know, this isn't like we're not putting things on the internet and transmitting results that way. I mean, like Kevin said, they physically come all to Augusta on a thumb drive or in locked metal boxes that actually have actual ballots inside. So by design, this isn't meant to be a fast process. There's no AI computer sitting there doing all this on election night and spitting out results. And that's because Maine has made a decision to have, you know, the most secure elections possible. And the way you do that is by not creating any pathways for a bad actor to go in and start messing around with results that they somehow hacked into through a computer. So it's low tech by design, and I would say slow and deliberate by design.
We'll go to Scott calling from Lisbon Falls. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yes, a couple of points. One, people complain about the fact that ranked choice voting costs a lot of money. But the truth is that in 1892, when the Constitution of Maine was changed to allow for a plurality vote rather than a majority vote, that meant that we were going to have somebody like LePage who won with, you know, his opponents were 61% of the population of Maine. And one thing about Maine is we're frugal. And darn, by golly, I don't want to have another election. That's a lot of money. And that's more money than ranked choice voting, I suspect. So that's one point. The other point is that people in Maine, eventually ranked choice voting, I think, will end up getting people that are much more nuanced. We end up with people that would rather choose. And by virtue of that, I actually voted my first vote for Paige Loud because I wanted to support a woman, especially a Native American woman, running in politics, knowing she wouldn't win. But doing so because I could support her and give her that first vote and, you know, wait for the other candidates that I have just talked to both to win. So that's my point.
Yeah, Scott, a couple of good points there. I'll start with the first one that, yeah, ranked choice may be expensive, but some states have a runoff election, Kevin, which would be even more expensive. And that's apparently what Maine used to do in the 1800s.
Yeah, it is. It would be more expensive, and it would be more, well, it'd be more expensive for the campaigns as well, because they would have to continue running ads and, you know, running everything that we do in modern elections now. It would take longer. So that is one argument against, you know, having runoff elections and in support of ranked choice voting. It'll be interesting to see what the cost estimates are for this, because they change every year. They do things a little slightly differently. They used to use courier services, you know, the first rendition of this, to go out and get those ballots. Now it's law enforcement. Every ballot, every memory stick that is picked up at a town is picked up by a law enforcement officer. To Sue's point, to keep that, you know, the election system integrity in place. One other thing that I think is really interesting, and, you know, Scott mentioned it, you know, the plurality issue. So again, I think one of the frustrations that we hear over and over again, and we talked about it, ranked choice voting was largely put in place because people wanted to avoid a situation like we saw in 2010 and have seen other times when, you know, the winner of the governor's race only wins with a minority of the vote. And that's still the case because of the constitutional requirements. So that, I think, is one argument against ranked choice voting that I hear over and over again. This is the reason why we wanted it.
And that could happen this year, because the governor's race will not be. It could be somebody with 30-something percentage of the vote becomes our next governor. Susan, what about Scott's thought that ranked choice voting was intended to, and he believes will eventually bring candidates that are more toward the center, less toward the wings, the fringe, I think was the word he used, fringe wings of their party. Does that seem to be happening?
I think it did in the Democratic primary for governor. I think Hannah Pingree is more of a middle of the road kind of candidate than certainly Shenna Bellows or Troy Jackson. So I think it worked in that situation. You know, and the other point Scott made was that ranked choice voting gave him the freedom to support Paige Loud, even though he knew she wouldn't win. He wanted to express support for her, perhaps to give her some encouragement to continue on and maybe get back on the ballot in future years and make more headway. So, you know, it seems to be an opportunity for folks, you know, who may not come again from kind of through that traditional government path, you know, to get out there and get their voices heard and be part of the process.
Scott, thanks so much for your call. Let's see here. I wanted to ask you all both about turnout, what we learned about turnout and what that bodes for the general election. We do know that in the past decade or so, Maine has grown. There are about 10% more people here, I think mostly in the first district, but a few in the second district. Kevin, add that all up. What did the math tell us during this primary election?
Well, the math suggested, like we went into it, went into the primaries, that Democrats were more enthusiastic to come out and vote. You know, if you want to just compare the two Republican and the Democratic gubernatorial primaries, there were more than 200,000 Democrats who voted in the Democratic primary. It was 216,000 votes cast, I believe. In the Republican side, it was 129,000-130,000. So that's, you know, that's a difference that does show or does suggest that there is more Democratic momentum and more motivation. And Democrats are going to try to keep that going for the general election.
And Susan, for primaries, more Democratic momentum, more Democratic enthusiasm. Are there more Democrats, or do we not know?
Well, in general, I think Democratic registration in Maine is around, you know, 35%, Republicans around 30%, Independents around 30%. So in general, they have a little bit of an edge in voter registration, but it's fairly well balanced. And, you know, back to your point on turnout, I did look up a stat here, and it says turnout increased by 55% from the last competitive gubernatorial primary on this round of voting.
Wow.
And Hannah Pingree won the most votes of any Democratic nominee for governor in Maine history. So as Kevin said, Democrats are pretty motivated at this point, and we'll see how that carries over into November.
55%, that's dramatic. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Well, we are going to take another quick break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're discussing the results of the primary. My guests, Maine public political reporter Kevin Miller, and Susan Cover with Spectrum News. You can share your comments and questions. You can send a brief email, if you're quick, to talk@mainepublic.org or call us 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Ron calling from Cumberland. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Jennifer. I've been listening to the program, and I'm just struck again by how effective ranked choice voting has been in expressing the will of a majority of the people. The comments obviously about the minority elections of governors, and we could go to ranked choice voting is really simple. I mean, it's an instant runoff. We could go to a runoff, but as has been pointed out, that's more expensive, and it also you tend not to get as much of a turnout on the second round. Here we get everybody out there, and if everyone is willing to rank one or two or three candidates at most, I would say, boy, your will is expressed. So terrific. Good show. Thanks.
Ron, thank you. Thoughts, Susan, Kevin?
Yeah, I think that's, he expresses an opinion that we do hear from people who support ranked choice voting. We certainly do hear from people who don't like it because of that. It's not quite an instant runoff because it does take 7 to 10 days to get the results. And there are some people that say that we want to know immediately. I think Sue mentioned earlier in the show that one of the Republican leaders in the House has already put in a bill to repeal ranked choice voting. Bobby Charles, the Republican nominee for governor, he said that he will work to repeal ranked choice voting as well. During a press conference where he talked about this, kind of pointed out that voters have twice approved this at the polls. And I said, so are you going to send this back to voters, or would you try to do this, make that change legislatively? And he suggested that he would try it legislatively. But in order to do that, he would need Republicans to control the state house as well.
All right. Well, Ron, thank you for your call. And we'll go up to Camden and Bill. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, Jen. Great show, like always. I just wanted to reinforce the point that the Maine state constitution requires a plurality. And that means whoever comes out on top wins, whether it's 30% or 39% or 50%. And secondarily, I'm not going to vote for two or three candidates. I'm going to vote for the candidate that represents me, and that's it.
Yeah, so this is interesting. We just heard from Ron, Susan, who likes ranked choice voting, and Bill clearly doesn't and thinks it's unconstitutional.
Well, and certainly the state Supreme Court agrees with Bill. They've twice weighed in and said, for general elections in the fall, what our Constitution says is you only need a plurality. So that's how those elections will be conducted in the fall. The court has said, if the legislature doesn't like that, then they need to change the Constitution, which would require 2/3 support for whoever controls the legislature. So that seems unlikely unless Democrats were to take over by a huge majority. So, we do have this, kind of two-step system that we do things a little bit differently in the primary than in the general election. And at least I should be clear on state level races. Now in federal races in November, if there were multi-candidate races, those would be ranked choice.
All right, Bill, thanks for your call. We'll go to South Portland and Phil. Hi, Phil, go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering whether the panelists or anybody has done an analysis of the impact in this election of unenrolled voters being able to vote for one party or the other. Did that affect the election in any way?
Good question. We have a semi-open primary now. People who are unenrolled in a political party walked into their voting place and asked for either a Republican or Democratic ballot. Do we know, Kevin, what kind of impact that had? Who asked for what and what they voted? How they voted?
We don't know that yet. We don't know at least the detailed numbers of it. I'm very curious to find out as well. It's clear that some independents did take advantage of that opportunity and did come vote. Seems like maybe more in the Democratic primary than in the Republican primary. But I think we're going to have to wait a little while longer to find out how many of those primary participants were unenrolled. Certainly the numbers for the absentee voting, we could see in that there were a substantial number of independent voters who were taking advantage of it.
Susan.
Just as a kind of a funny side note, during a press conference last week, Rick Bennett, the independent running for governor, did say that he voted in the Democratic primary. So obviously that was interesting given his history as a Republican. And of course, as reporters, we asked him who he voted for, and he declined to say.
All right. Thanks, Susan. Let's see. We'll go to Carl calling from Banner Island. Hi, Carl. Go ahead.
One of the things about the ranked choice voting and waiting 7-8 days, whatever it takes, I don't mind. I'm fine with it. But Americans and humans in general are so used to having everything handed to them so quickly, you know, between these idiot cell phones and computers not loading fast enough. They want everything. They want it now. They want it quick. They want to know who it is. They don't want to wait. And I think that's pretty sad, really. So I think ranked choice gives more opportunity for somebody who thinks about it a little bit, some different opportunities. So.
But what you're seeing among people you know is that people who are already maybe kind of wound up in a political year are even more so now because of the wait.
Well, everybody, you know, you see them on their phones and computers and everything. Every computer ad is, this is faster than that one, because you don't want to push a button and have something not happen for 30 seconds. You know, it's just the craziness of the world that we're living in. Just people want stuff quick, fast, got to know, got to go, you know. And I think it's good to take a little time, think about it, count up votes and figure out who won. It's a lot healthier than voting somebody in jest or just holding your nose and voting for the least worst candidate, you know?
You know, Carl, Dan has, we have an email from Dan who says, excuse me, counting the votes takes too long. How long were the campaigns? How many candidates were there? So Dan agrees with you. Thank you so much for calling in. We'll go to Jean calling from Portland. Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling you because I think no one's brought up the issue of a change in leadership style. I think it's a generational change, and the whole concept of three candidates working together, to me, marks a change to a more distributive form of leadership rather than a more egotistical, strong person type of leadership. And the second thing I wanted to say about security, having been a longtime poll worker, is the amount of reconciling and cross-checking with paperwork around spoil ballots, open ballot packages, absentee ballots takes a long time, and people should work in the polls. And lastly, the reason we have very secure machines is thanks to Matt Dunlop, we are not connected to the internet. So nobody can tinker with the software. Thank you.
Thanks, Jean. Jean has several thoughts there. The first one I'm going to throw to you all. Her thought about a different kind of leadership style that, you know, now for the at least the governor's race, we may see somebody who had to work collaboratively to get elected or at least to get past the primary. Susan, what do you think of that thought?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened when we saw the alliance with Troy, Shenna, and Hannah. We saw how Hannah benefited from that. So she is, you know, kind of a more consensus candidate on the Democratic side. Bobby Charles took a different approach. He really encouraged his voters to only rank him all the way across the ballot because he thought it would be simpler, I think, and he doesn't support ranked choice voting. So definitely stylistic differences there. And as we've talked about a little bit before with Rick Bennett in the race, then folks have a third option. I have an independent who does have a government background and is also a former Republican and, you know, kind of has a little bit of both worlds, I guess you would say.
Yeah, and to Jean's second point, Kevin, talking about a generational difference, I suspect we don't know the age breakdown of who voted?
No, we don't. I mean, it does. Main elections, older Mainers tend to turn out for elections more often, and I think that's even more so, even truer in primaries, but we don't know that yet. I just want to hit real briefly on Gene's other point about election security. I mean, one of the benefits of having this ranked choice process is it's all done in public. You can watch it on YouTube. You can go and anybody can go and watch it, and it is like paint dry, watching paint dry. Because it's very slow, it's very tedious, and it is boring. And the deputy chief secretary of state, Kate McBrien, she said she, I think she has that bag that says, you know, she likes boring elections. That's what people want. And during this whole process, yeah, there were some hiccups, there were some irregularities, some, you know, things didn't get shipped the right way. But no one has come forward and said there was a major problem. And I think that's the benefit of having these ranked choice. And even whether it's a recount, people get to see how detailed and how committed our elections officials are to making sure they get every single vote counted. And it just takes 10 days to do it in this case.
I want to ask both of you, and I'll start with you, Susan, what do you expect now? Now that we know who is on the ballot in November, now that we know that at the very least, Maine's U.S. Senate race and second congressional district race are in the sights of both major political parties, both very close margins in Congress. What can we all expect in the next few months?
Well, I think you should expect a lot of television ads. I think you should expect a lot of being asked to call Senator Collins, either to thank her for bringing money to Maine or to criticize her for some votes that she's taken. There's going to be, the typical debates. There's going to be a lot of money spent. And I think, hopefully Maine voters will get all of the information that they need to make, you know, good decisions in November. I mean, you know, I'm kind of hoping, I guess, personally, for a little bit of a lull now for a couple of weeks where everybody can kind of catch their breath and celebrate the 250th and the 4th of July. And, I don't expect to see a total summer lull where we don't really see anything till after Labor Day. But hopefully maybe a little slower pace for a couple of weeks until things pick back up.
Kevin?
Yeah, that would be nice. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I hope it does. With you, Sue, I hope it does. I think one thing that will be very interesting to watch is, you know, how much the Senate race dominates the coverage and dominates the attention that I'm getting and what impact that has on the race for governor and second congressional district and our legislative races. And if it's a case where the Senate race is just drowning everything out, you know, unfortunately, that means less attention will be paid to the governor's race, which I think is obviously very important, and to legislative races where you get most local control decisions are made.
Mm. Do you all think that there will be debates this fall? And if there are, will everyone participate? Kevin, are you hearing from the candidates about whether, are they talking about that yet?
I think there definitely will be debates. I think, you know, there's always a chance that some of the candidates decide not to. I think voters expect it at this point. And when candidates opt not to do it, it's because they feel like they are in the lead. They have a very substantial lead and it's not going to benefit them. And I don't know if that's the case in any of these races that we see.
What do you think, Susan? Do you expect that all of the candidates will participate in debates, unlike in the more recent elections?
Yeah, I definitely do, because I don't think we'll see, particularly in the governor's race, someone, you know, jump out with a, you know, 20% lead out of the gate. I think all three of them are going to have to make the case. And one of the best ways to do that is through debates. I mean, it doesn't cost you any money. You show up, you know, you deal with the media, but they have to deal with the media, on an everyday basis anyway. So it's a great chance for all of them to make their case, you know, directly to voters, you know, without a filter and without having to raise, I mean, they'll raise plenty of money, I'm sure, but without having to rely on, you know, tons of TV advertising, you know, like Kevin said, that's probably going to get drowned out by the Plattner Collins race.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just, we only have a few seconds left, Kevin, but I'm guessing that people who live in the second congressional district are really going to be seeing it.
Oh, yeah. I think they're going to get it on the Collins Plattner race. They're going to get it in the second district race. I mean, it's the one of the big organizations out there that tracks these ad impact is projecting $500 million in spending on all the races, including $400 million on the Senate race alone. That's more than double that we saw in 2020, I think. So You just be prepared for just getting an onslaught of ads, mailers, all those things.
Well, thank you both. That was Kevin Miller, Maine Public State House correspondent, also with us for the hour. Susan Cover, State House reporter and multimedia content producer for Spectrum News. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, renewal and growth in the city of Lewiston. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.